Paddy Power, sponsors of the Road to Cheltenham.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of Road to Cheltenham. We have got so much to talk about from the last week and so much to look forward to as well with the Dublin Racing Festival and the City Isles on the horizon. Ruby, it's going to be a packed show, but quite a lot happened immediately after we walked away from our show with Jack Kennedy at Goran Park last Thursday. We're recording in the morning and two items of news came out during the course of the day. One of them, oh, by the way, it went live in the morning. So I don't know why I said recorded. You could tell it was live from the time of day that we were there. But Alahoe ended up sustaining a problem and is out of Cheltenham.
Yeah, he was bitly in the following morning after Thurles, worse again the next morning. So they went about investigating it, and on Thursday the news came back that, yeah, he's out. I suppose it'll have to be assessed again, Lydia, in the next week or 10 days or even a bit longer to see if he'll be back to Punchestown or not, but hopefully he will.
And the other item of news, which really impacts on the Gordon Elliott stable, but also particularly on racing fans, I think he'll be looking ahead to the Dublin Racing Festival, and that is that Caldwell Construction, Andy and Gemma Brown, have announced that they are stepping away from the sport with immediate effect and selling all of their horses at public auction on Monday. That means the likes of these horses, Caldwell Potter, about whom Jack Kennedy was particularly warm when we spoke to him last Thursday, and Mighty Bandit, who they thought a lot of, the juvenile, Phil Dorr, who was having his best ever season, Imagine, who might yet still make the Kinloch Bray, they won't be running at the Dublin Racing Festival this weekend, but there are likely to be some fireworks at the sale on Monday. We'll keep an eye on that space and give you an update on it this time next week. But Ruby, we need to move on with the actual action, and we're going to start off with the rescheduled My Pension Expert Clarence House, which had no El Fabiolo but did have John Bonn up against the horse that won it 12 months earlier, Edith de Gite, but also a certain Elixir de Nuts. What happened here?
Okay, 1-4 shot got turned over. That's what happened here. Look, they lined up, went a really good gallop. Edith de Gite, Elixir de Nuts, John Bond jumped out with them. Nube Negra sat in behind, and Fugitive, who was always going to be struggling a little bit, was. And by the time they jumped the second fence, Fugitive was really on the back foot. Now, the third fence, Edith de Gite threw himself at it, and John Bond got in really deep and got high and was slightly awkward. And when he got to the fourth fence, you could see that in John Bond jumping. He went really high at the fourth fence. And when they rounded the bend to the fifth, if you look at Elixir de Nuts to John Bond, how quick Elixir de Nuts was compared to John Bond, who's dawdling in the air. He was the same again at the seventh fence. And at the eighth fence, Editor de Geek joins back in with Elixir de Nuts, and they both outjumped John Bond. Now, the ninth fence, which was the ditch, John Bond did match them. Nube Negra was flat to the boards. John Neal had to give him a reminder. And then they turned to the 11th. Freddie Jingle sits quiet. Gingle even sits quiet on Elixir de Nuts. James Bond spots a stride on John Bond, and John Bond guesses into the middle of it, and James does really well to stay on him. And then they head down to the third last fence. Freddie commits on Elixir de Nuts. He doesn't get very high, but he doesn't lose any ground, whereas John Bond behind him goes way up in the air and loses even more. As they come away, you can see the gap from Elixir de Nuts to Nube Negra to John Bond. It's increased. Then James switches out. He comes at Elixir de Nuts, going to the second last, jumps to the front, and you're thinking, he's probably going to win again. But John Bond goes to the last, jams on, pricks his ears, takes all day to jump it, and Elixir de Nuts, in fairness to him, Freddie Gingell committed him, and he flew the last, got back in front, and then was tough enough to hold off John Bond. Lots of things went wrong for John Bond. Nothing went right. But to be fair to Elixir de Nuts, he didn't lose any momentum, even at the third last. His jumping was spectacular, and himself and Freddie Gingle have formed a wonderful relationship.
They really have, and Elixir de Nuts got into a fantastic rhythm. Freddie Gingell, that was his first Grade 1 winner. It was also a first Grade 1 winner for his uncle, Joe Tizzard, who took over the licence from his father, Colin Tizzard, last season. And as you say, the partnership is fantastic between the two of them. The Howland Gold Cup, the Newbury Handicap, they weren't together for the Desert Orchid, but back together for the Clarence House. Freddie unable to claim, age of 18. He's got a big future ahead, hasn't he?
Oh, hopefully, because the sport needs stars. It needs people with futures. It needs big, bright new names. And hopefully that'll be Freddie.
Now, they've proved as well that if you're not in it, you can't win it. They've got to roll the dice for the Champion Chase, haven't they?
Of course they are. I mean, could you see him running the Grand Annual? I couldn't. Of course they're going to roll the dice. Whoever knows what's going to happen in a horse race. But, and there are, what are the options for Elixir de Nuts?
Absolutely. It's
going there.
Well, I mean, and at least third, if not potentially better, is up for grabs as well in the Queen Mother Champion Chase.
If you don't hold a ticket, you can't win the lottery.
As they proved on Saturday. Now, when I got home from Cheltenham the following day, I watched a bit of the ITV racing coverage and I heard you and Mick Fitzgerald differing on what you would have done on John Bonn with what James Bowen did on John Bonn. And I thought now, with Analyse This, would be a good time for you to explain fully your point of view of the ride in your own words.
So for Analyse This week, we are going to look at James Bowen on John Bonn. Now, everybody makes mistakes and would love another go at some races, and I think James would like another go on this one. So as they approach the fourth last fence, Freddie Gingell is in front on Elixir de Nuts. James Bowen is outside him on John Bonn. But James commits in here. Now, he does really well to stay on him. John Bonn shows himself, loses his hind end. His right shoulder lands on the horse's neck and he keeps himself on. But he's dropped back to fourth. Editor de Geet is off the bridle just in front of him. Elixir de Nuts is in front. Nube Negra. And James now has to react to what's just happened. What does he do? He can't stick to his original game plan. He needs to alter. He has that mistake made. Now, he goes to the third last, gets really slow and high, and he's even further behind. Now, James then switches out to go and tackle Nube Negra, which probably was his original plan. But when something happens in a race, you have to react and change. And this is where James should have changed. When he gets up here to cross the road beside Nube Negra, he should stay there. But he doesn't. When he starts to go forward, he keeps committing on John Bonn and he goes to the second last. Now, you could argue that he pins the second last after missing the third last, and he does. He's much quicker than Elixir of the Nuts at the second last, but now he's in front. He's missed the fourth last. He's jammed on at the third last. That's two of the last three fences. And he goes to the last fence and does the same thing. He pricks his ears, backs off, slows himself down, and Elixir de Nuts gets all the momentum. And he's gone by him on landing and he can't take it back. I imagine his original game plan was to attack off the bend to the second last and be gone going to the last. But with the mistakes, you need to change. And you only learn those things by making mistakes, by getting experience and dealing with them. That is professional sport, unfortunately. Most people get away with those mistakes because they make them on a Monday and Tuesday or Wednesday when there's very few people watching. It just happened to happen to James Bowen on a Saturday on a 4-1 unshot. But what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
And of course, James picked himself up, dusted himself down and won on Mary's Rock at Doncaster the following day, of which more later. And he also starred earlier in the day on Sergino. At the time, Ruby, I was thinking a big mitigating factor to me seemed to be how much John Bonn was lugging and hanging to his left, jumping to his left. Now, I know he had just left, but it seemed to me that he was jumping with more inhibition than he had done earlier in the season.
And I didn't, because I expected of John Bonn. If you look back to him, even as a novice hurdler back in Haydock, whatever novice hurdler it was, he ran there. John Bonn has always carried his head slightly off to the side of his body. And he does lean to his left. You see him here, head up between the first and the second hurdle. And even at the last hurdle in that same novice hurdle when Aidan Coleman committed him, he does go to his left and goes to the running rail. And he does it. You can watch him back in the Ark of the Tingle Creek, even in the Schlur earlier in the year. He does hold his head slightly to the side. Now, lots of horses do, but I don't know, from watching John Bonn, I didn't register him hanging.
But his jumping has got worse. From the start of the Schlur, when you remember the praise that Nico de Boinville heaped on him, compared to the Tingle Creek next time, compared to last time in the Clarence House, each time his jumping has been a little bit less fluid.
Yeah, it's more cautious. I wouldn't say worse, because he's not a bad jumper. Yes, he did make a mistake the other day at Ascot. But that's the first real mistake he's made in a long time. So I wouldn't say he's a bad jumper. What he is, though, is cautious, and he does back off. And that you can see in his speed retention. When you look at him on this graph, you watch him in the Slur Chase, he averaged losing 3.93 miles per hour. In the Tingle Creek, that was 4.21, but he wasn't ridden as aggressively in the Tingle Creek. And then on Saturday last in the Clarence House, he lost 5.45 miles per hour. Now, there was 14 fences in the Clarence House, only 13 in the Schlur, and 13 in the Tingle Creek. So if we take out that really bad mistake at the Fort Last, where he lost over 11 miles per hour, if you take that out and average the other 13 fences, he still lost 4.99, which was the slowest or most careful he's jumped all year.
Yeah, Ambassador, you're being very kind to him there by taking out that 4 hour mistake.
I know you are, but if you want to say there was more jumps, and well, of course, the mistake is going to add to speed loss. So even if you take that out and blank that never happened, he still jumps slower. I think that's more telling.
The point is more powerful. I totally agree with you. We have highlighted since the start of this series that he did tend up to put in, I'd say a safety step, you'd say put down. But he's doing that increasingly. He's just becoming more and more, as you say, careful at his fences. Let's have a look, shall we, at the impact on the Betway Queen Mother Champion Chase prices. As a result of that, with Paddy Power, El Fabiolo understandably hardened to 1-2 from 4-5. And John Bond was pushed out just the point from 5-2 to 7-2. And then it's Dino Blue, who's also been shortened as well as a result of a particular race. I do have news as well before we move on to think about Dino Blue. Some news from Paul Nichols, who scratched Grenadine, who's now a 10-year-old, a 3-times grade one winner, all of them at Sandown. Last time we saw him was third behind John Bond in the Celebration Chase. He sustained a small hairline fracture. So just in case you're interested in him in big prices for the Shelton Festival, he has been scratched from both the Queen Mother and also the Ryanair and is out for the season. We wish him a speedy recovery. Back to the Dublin Chase this weekend, Ruby. We have the lineup of El Fabiolo versus Dino Blue versus last year's winner of the race, Gentleman and Me. And a few people are looking at that race and thinking, well, if Dino Blue can shake up El Fabiolo in any kind of way, or, you know, even potentially beat him, would it be possible to see her rerouted towards the Queen Mother Champion Chase? She's heading towards the Mrs. Paddy Power, says everybody at this stage. And John Bond does have an alternative entry in the Ryanair and clearly would stay further. How pivotal do you think the Dublin Chase could be?
I think she'd have to beat him. I don't think shaking him up is going to do. I think she would have to beat him to say you would throw her into the Champion Chase. And can you guarantee that she's even going to beat Gentleman to Me? I know she beat him at Christmas, but that was his first run of the season. And he's always a horse who's improved for his first run. So, of course, in theory, if she goes and beats El Fabiolo, she could run the Champion Chase and they could divert John Bond to the Ryanair. But there's a couple of big ifs in there. I'm not so sure they're going to happen.
And in 7 days' time, we can deal with the realities, shall we? Should we deal with some realities from Saturday as well? The Paddy Power Cotswold Chase. So we're going up by just over a mile in distance for this, and it was won by Capodanno for Willie Mullins and Paul Townend.
Look, he'd run well in the Savills Chase and he progressed here. The real whacker bucked out with a high Senor Steve Monqueen, Royal Pagay, the novice stay away Faye, that the ill fader, that's all right, Gino and Capodanno. But real whacker jumped out and he attacked his fences really well early in the race. He went a good gallop. Second fence, he flies it and he's well clear. Down to the fifth fence, the real whacker attacks it for Sam Twist and Davis. And he's a good stretch on the field. Now, Stay Away FA made his first mistake at the sixth. He just reached for it with Harry Cobden and landed in it. But he wasn't the only one missing, because at the next fence, Capodanno seems to get right in and land static on all four legs. And at the eighth fence, the real whacker did miss one. Now, when they got around to the 11th fence, Royal Pagayu has been squeezed away on landing, but the field had closed right up. Now, Capodanno was very wide on the outside, but your eye was always drawn to a high Senor on the inside of the 12th fence. He was jumping really well for Steve McQueen, and he was travelling really well. 14th fence again, a high Senor was brilliant. The last ditch, a high Senor jumped to the lead, and, you know, Capodanno was starting to get niggled along as they jumped to 16th, and you're thinking, whoa, a high Senor. But unfortunately, he rounds to the 17th, and Steve McQueen's leather breaks. His right leg is gone down by the side of him, and that basically blew his chance. Now, again, something has to happen to you for you to learn. But when you lose an iron or break a leather or an iron, you have to take your other leg out and at least balance yourself on the horse's back to try and keep yourself going forward. It's 5 abreast then, jumping the third last fence, obviously to bypass the second last. Because of that, it's all right, Gino. But Capodanno appears into shot then, going to the last. He jumps it and gallops away to the line. initially I was Ryan Pagai fell, but he was starting to stay on, but I don't think Cheltenham is his track. Initially I was a bit disappointed with Stay Away Faye. Watching the replay, I did think he came home well enough, as did the Real Whacker. But I think on the day, the best horse probably won.
It was a muddling race for various reasons, wasn't it? And I think when they had to bypass the second last, Cappadano was travelling pretty well. Paul Tannen looked like he was pretty confident that he'd got the field covered. And he was able to commit at that point. And I think that was the difference between winning and losing. Some horses, the Real Whacker, one of them, were outpaced as a result.
Yeah, they were. The Real Whacker. And look, he's been outpaced as well in the King George. And it's just the difference in my mind between being the best novice and then competing in open company. And to me, there's just that little gulf with the Real Whacker. And I think LeBron hasn't really franked the form this year, but you saw Jerry Calom, even if he underperformed at Christmas, he was still 10 or 12 off Gallop in the Champ. That's the best you can put him. There's just that gulf between novice and the next category.
Yeah, I tend to agree. At least there was a bit more this time. Reverting to those front-running tactics, he never got into that rhythm that he had done in the Brown Advisory, even though he was all by himself on the lead for much of the time. Martin Dixon mentioned this in our live coverage on Racing TV last Saturday. Mike Cheekpiece's help.
Didn't cross my mind anyway. I thought he looked plenty honest.
I just meant going into his fences because he was backing off them. Would that help?
I didn't think that didn't cross my mind. Maybe they'll try them, but I didn't look at it and think that's what he needs.
Okay. Patrick Neville is talking about full steam ahead to the Gold Cup with the Real Whacker. Back to the winner. He's not in the Gold Cup. What's going on? Surely some mistake from some clerical error from William Mullen? Surely the table of cat is usually in.
Yeah, they are, but no, there was no clerical error there. He's not in the Gold Cup, and as far as I know, he goes right in there.
Right, okay. I can't see him. His jumping was one of the better efforts, and as it was in the Savills Chase, where he, you know, raced wide, that line that I thought might have been an advantage, but he's backed that up with this win here. I just wonder, in the heat of something like a Ryanair or a Gold Cup, but a Ryanair, as that's what he's got the entry for, whether his jumping would hold up.
Yeah, it's a question. I thought he was very good as a novice in Punchdowns a long time ago, where he was ridden fairly prominently. His jumping was a help to him that day. Yeah, maybe. I never had him down as a poor jumper, but he'll definitely have to sharpen up a bit coming down a trip. But he's coming possibly down a little bit in grade as well.
There's the betting from Paddy Power before and after the weekend. Cappadano's halved in price to 8-1. They're no bet prices, so hence El Fabiola's at the top of the market. Banbridge has tightened, and John Bonn has been pushed out, interestingly, to 3-1 from 7-4. Stay away, Faye, even. 3 days later, Paul Nicholls scratched him from the Gold Cup. It is Brown Advisory, full steam ahead. And he enters that race with his credentials enhanced. However, that was a more galloping track. We know that the new course is down onto the old course. Yes, it was a muddling pace in the Cotswold Chase, but might he just hit some flat spots in the Brown Advisory?
He'll be back in grade as well, though. Back in with novices, not in with older horses. And well, I was pleased with him. I got the feeling, talking to Paul Nicholls too, that he thinks he'll improve a good bit for the run, that he hadn't been overly hard on him through Christmas into the early new year. So I'd say you could see a slimmer, trimmer Stay Away Faye at the festival than he did at Trials Day. And he did get beaten in the River Don that day last year.
Battling, yeah, absolutely, and staying on. I like the horse. I think he leaves last weekend with his credentials enhanced. Ahoy, Senor. I mean, what a star-crossed horse this is. I mean, if you look at the Race IQ data, he's 3.5 lengths better than any horse in the field. I mean, mark the date and time, the day where Ahoy, Senor's jumping is the best in the field. That might say something about his opposition as well. But it must be so frustrating to have got him into that kind of rhythm and then for the stirrup leather to disappear 4 out.
Your luck is out. But he did. I thought Steve McQueen got a great tune out of him. He never interfered with the horse. He just let him go, find his own stride, kept him balanced. He always had contact with the reins without ever being overly hard on the reins. And the horse seemed to enjoy it, and he had him in a great rhythm. But it's just, where do you go? Will they go Gold Cup? Do you?
I think you have to after that, don't you? You have to after that. It's the one track in the country that suits him, the new course at Cheltenham.
Yeah, it suits him better, I think, in the stairs, sort of.
Do you? You would go there? Okay.
I put him up at 40-1 as well. So I was kind of thinking would suit
when,
me.
When did you do that? When did you do that?
On a podcast last week, I was thinking if Lucinda Russell, that'd really suit me if he went there.
Gold Cup, Lucinda. There's the betting for the Gold Cup. So no great impact from the Cotswold Chase, but that isn't going to apply to this weekend when we've got a four-runner Irish Gold Cup. But the key point, Ruby, is we've got the big two. Round four between Galopin Deschamps and Fast or Slow. Now, both Martin Brassel and JJ Slevin have referenced not having a grueler at Christmas like Galopin Deschamps did.
Yeah, but sure, that's sport, tactics, build-up. You've got to find the positives that are suiting you. And if you're Paul Townend and William Mullins, they'll be finding the positives that suit them. That is just, that's life in sport. You can look for negatives or positives, and it'll be a great race. The right two are there. I'd imagine from watching Christmas, we know exactly what way it's going to pan out. Gallop and Deschamps will go forward. I'd imagine JJ will just sit somewhere on his coattails. And look, it's a very small field. But what do you put in there to make it a better race?
Well, I mean, I suppose Jerry Colomb, who's now going straight to the Gold Cup.
Yeah, he's the only one that's missing. That makes it a five-runner race. But I suppose was the right word there, because he's a lot to find on Gallop and Deschamps from Christmas. I think he had the right to.
Oh, I agree. It's going to be fascinating. Gordon Elliott has reverted to his original view of using two runs to get to the Gold Cup. He feels that Jerry Colomb was better than that Savills Chase second, just narrowly ahead of Cappadano, and he wants to have one go at Galopin Deschamps in the Cheltenham Festival. Of course, he won the race with Doncaster in 2016. And Gentleman's Game, who took advantage of Brave Man's Game mistake at the final fence in the Charlie Hall, he goes straight to the Gold Cup, says Maz Morris, who won the race in 2006 with War of Attrition, having had only three career starts over fences.
Yeah, but I was really impressed with him at Weatherby, wasn't it? He seemed a pure natural. He went there fresh and got the job done. Has a bit to find. Sorry, I think he does. Even on his best form, with the mistake, Brave Man's Game probably beats Gentleman's Game, and Brave Man's Game had a penalty. Gentleman's Game had an allowance. I think that's probably a bit behind Gold Cup form just yet.
I suspect you're probably right, but I think the greater test of stamina will also suit Gentleman's Game. Anyway, I'm glad he's turning up, because it just adds an extra bit of intrigue for the Gold Cup. We're moving on now to the Hurdlers. So the hurdling performance of the weekend, there is only one, Ruby, and it was Lossie Math's demolition of the Unibet International It's the Beulah Hurdle on Saturday, that has been moved.
I don't even think it's the International anymore.
It is. It's registered as the International.
Oh, right.
But it should be the Beulah. But let's not bore people with that any further. Lossie Math was brilliant.
She was very good. Tight enough field, Lydia. Only five runners, was it? Six, five. Rubo jumped out to make the run, and Love Envoy sat second. First Street, Lossie Mouth behind that, and Guard Your Dreams, who'd been a long time off the track, dropped in at the back. I was happy to see how well Lossie Mouth settled. If you watch her away from the second hurdle up around the corner, she'd relaxed well for a filly who hadn't run since Punchestown last year. Did get a little bit in Paul's hands down to the third hurdle. Got in really deep to the fourth hurdle and then pinged the fifth hurdle when she was quite long. Sixth hurdle, before you were fancying were really good. Guard Your Dreams made a mistake, which was the third last. Probably didn't help him considering how long he'd been off. And it did start quick, and then down to the second last. Harry Cobden was completely in control of the race on Rubo. Jumps to second last, but Paul Townend's body language, even as they got up over 34, 35 miles an hour, when Love Envoy went to tackle Rubo in front, Lossie Mouth was still doing it relatively easy. Quickens really well to challenge the two in front. Pricked her ears going to the last when she got to the front for Paul. Jumped it really well and scooted all the way to the line. Now, she did decrease in speed. To your eye, you're thinking, God, she's flying. But they were doing 35 mile an hour turning in. By the time she gets to the winning post, they're only doing 31. But it was still a really good performance. She jumped well. She settled well enough. And it was a really good first start of the season.
Yeah, she slows in the final furlong, but she really has accelerated from two out when it turned into a sprint. And she's utterly dominant. And the way in which she came up on the outside, approaching the last, and then absolutely pinged it, It's just a performance that exudes pure class. Before we talk about what she is doing and what she should do, let's talk about what she's beaten. Love and Voir. I was probably a bit stronger than you about being concerned about what she did at Sandown. I know the ground was difficult, but nonetheless, she did look a little bit disinterested. Here she was at least more like her zesty self, but I still don't think she's back to her best. How about you?
No, I wouldn't think she is either. But like, she did get the run of the race in last year's Mayor's Hurdle at the Cheltenham Festival. She dictated it from the front, and it was the mighty Honeysuckle who came to chin her. So, look, she has run better, but I still don't think she's quite run up to that level of form, to my eye anyway. Now, you're back to 2 miles. Maybe she's a better mare going further. 2.5 might suit her more in March, but she didn't. I know Lossie Mout slowed a bit from the last day up. Well, they all did, but at least she didn't fade back behind Rubo. And, you know, First Street was closing. But I think the Twist and Davis horse finishing Guard Your Dreams, he probably wasn't far enough behind Love Envoy for my money.
Okay. So back to the winner, because that race was all about the winner. And after a performance like that, when you dominate a grade two in that kind of fashion, you know, barely coming out of second gear, shouldn't you be running in the champion hurdle and not the mare's hurdle?
I suppose if you were a six-year-old, you probably would be. But not as a five-year-old to me, no. If she was a year older and that's what she did, you'd be saying, yeah, we'll have a go at Constitution Hill. But no, not as a five-year-old, I wouldn't.
And why is that? You're just because of how infrequently five-year-olds have managed to win the race, the last being, of course, the ill-fated Espoir d'Allan in 2019 and catch it prior to him in 2008.
Yeah, and even if you look at Espoir d'Allan's race and catch its race, I mean, Espoir d'Allan beat Mellon and Lorena. Appleshade was favourite. I don't think that was a sensational champion hurdle. Silver Streak ran into the money. You look at catch it. He beat Osana. The third horse on that occasion was Punjabi as a five-year-old. He went back and won the champion hurdle as a six-year-old. But I think five-year-olds do win champion hurdles, but I don't think they win champion hurdles like the one that's going to happen this year. And I think if you're on Lossie Mout, train Lossie Mout, and you want to see Lossie Mout give Constitution Hill a race, I think you let her be as good as she can be. Let her develop. Let her get up to that level or close to that level and then have a go.
Well, 2 points against that. I mean, it used to be fairly routine back in the 70s, after the First World War and Second World War, sorry, and into the 70s that five-year-olds would win race. Four-year-olds used to win it in the early days, including Brown Jack. But you're making the assumption that Lossie Mout is actually going to improve as a six-year-old, whereas, you know, maybe she's actually at her peak as a five-year-old. There is some risk involved in not striking while the iron's hot, is all I'm arguing.
There's risk in everything. Whatever way you do it, there was a risk in not running her in the autumn of a four-year-old season. There was a risk in running her in against older horses on her first run this season as a five-year-old. There's risk in everything you do, but all you can do is try and make it as calculated a risk as possible. And when you look at her from Punchestown last year when she beat Gallimard so to what she did at Cheltenham at the weekend, you could argue she has improved by being given time. And therefore, if you continue to nurture her without overfacing her, there's every reason to think she will improve again.
Yep, I do take that argument. I'm just pointing out that there is an assumption involved in it as well. And clearly connections have talked.
But there's also a huge assumption in that she's only going to be as good as she's ever going to be as a five-year-old.
Yes,
that's
of course.
That's as big an assumption.
Of course, but it's kind of that assumption is the one that's ignored. It is assumed that horses will improve with maturity, and it isn't necessarily the case.
You're then assuming that the people making these decisions haven't looked at both sides of the coin. Now, maybe you only look at one side of the coin, but I would assume that those that made this decision have looked at both sides of the coin.
I am just highlighting to people that there are two sides to the coin. I'm not making any assumption about what the decision-making process has been. Clearly, Rich Ritchie and Joe Chambers' racing manager and Willie Mullins have talked about learning from what happened with Boban last season and approaching this season differently with Lossie Mout. My second point, other than the ideological objection to a horse winning a grade two like that should run in a champion hurdle and the assumption point, is how effective is she going to be over 2.5 miles? Doesn't she look all speed? That performance was all about speed. Her breeder, Ian Kellett, whom Nick Cluck spoke to on his podcast earlier this week, isn't convinced that the 2.5 will suit as well as 2 miles. What do you think about the extra trip?
Well, we think she will. we wouldn't be at all worried about it. It wouldn't have crossed our minds to say she could stay as well as she did as a 3-year-old, let alone a 4-year-old. We would have no concerns about that. Obviously, nobody knows, but sure, if we all knew the answers, Lydia, what's the point in playing the game?
Exactly, but it's fun to try and speculate, isn't it? I take the point. Generally, if you stay 2-mile-1 for the triumph as a 4-year-old that strongly, then
and even for her, she got 2 miles as a 3-year-old and yeah. got 2 miles quite early as a 3-year-old. She did run in. Did she run in France? She did. She beat Zarek the Brave first time for us, so she would have been a winner in France before that. So she got 2 as a young 3-year-old. Mm.
Anyway, she is very exciting nonetheless, and interesting to debate her as well. I look forward to what she is going to do next. She obviously has some illustrious stable companions who are in action this weekend for the Irish Champion Hurdle. State Man, of course, who's seeking his 8th Grade 1 win, his 2nd Irish Champion Hurdle, but it's a rematch with the Matheson runner-up Impair a Pass, and the added frisson of Bob Olinger dropping down to 2 miles for only the 2nd time in his career.
Yeah, what was the maiden Hurley's last run over 2 miles?
He finished 2nd to Fernie Hollow, 45 lengths clear of the rest of them at Goran Park.
Yeah, probably went too slow that day, actually, when you look back at it. But can he looked really good in the rail keel, but it is a step forward for him. And he's definitely on the way back. And chasing probably didn't suit him, and it took him quite a while to get over that. You know, and losing, when you get well beaten in a division that A, you're not up to, or B, you're not liking, it can take a while to rebuild the horse's confidence. But Bob Olinger does look, or Olinger, which one are we going with?
Well, you go Olinger and I go Olinger, and I suspect you're right on this one.
I wouldn't suspect I'm overly right on the pronunciation of many things, Lydia. So I will go with Olinger, and he adds intrigue to the race.
He does.
I would be surprised if he's able for statement.
Yeah, so do I. But he does add an extra facet to it, and I like that. And I think it, in terms of going up or down in trip is the thing to be doing with him. Shall I move on to the other mares, the mares that Lossiemouth will be ranging against? Because we had some significant performances at Doncaster, starting with Mary's Rock on the Sunday, who beat You Wear It Well quite snugly in the end in the rescheduled Warfield.
Yeah, and You Wear It Well settled better than Marie's Rock did. She took a fair old bite with James Bourne, which actually was good to see for Marie's Rock, because she used to be that way in the past. So it was good to see her alive and well. And she did. She pulled out plenty from the last to hold You Wear It Well off. Step back in the right direction for Marie's Rock. And maybe just those couple of runs at 3 miles took more out of her. She was disappointed in Newbury, and it was good to see her back.
Yes, and this was over 3, but as you're hinting, it was a test of speed rather than actual
yeah,
stamina.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, but it's a fair point, because it wasn't a test of stamina in any kind of way. The previous day, quite a deep mares event, won by Ashro Diamond, beating Under Control, Mary's Rock stable companion, Nicky Henderson's, and Ashro Diamond stable companion, Gallimar So, the younger horse, who was conceding weight.
Yeah, and I thought Ashro Diamond jumped really well for Patrick Mullins, just always in front of Gallimar So. Under Control was behind him. Looked like Gallimar So needed the run. Like, she just got to the second last and got tired. Ashro Diamond was gone, and then Gallimar So started to run on again when she got her second win. But Ashro Diamond was really professional. I thought she jumped super. They were, again, didn't look like it was an overly strongly run race. They were trapping down over the last 3 hurdles, and I thought Ashro's jumping was rock solid.
She's got speed, hasn't she? And she was a little bit speedier and fitter, I take that point, than Gallimar. So over 2.5 miles, I can see it swinging the other direction, can't you? The advantage.
Well, Gallimar So did look to improve when she went to France last April, when she stepped, or May, when she stepped up to 2 miles and 3 furlongs. So going forward, it would definitely suit Gallimar So.
And it was good to see Under Control back on track after flopping in the Jerry Field, and she's had an operation to correct her breathing since then, and it seems to have helped.
Definitely helped. It was a step forward.
Yeah, really was. Okay, so this division is really building now, because we also had the Limestone Lad over the weekend, where Tell Me Something Girl, a past winner of the Mayor's Hurdle, was ranged against the Mayor's Novices Hurdle, of course, but she fell, didn't she, 2 out in Marie's Rock's Mayor's Hurdle when going quite strongly. Anyway, she was beaten by Zarek the Brave over the weekend.
Yeah, she was brought down, wasn't she, in that Mayor's Hurdle?
That's right.
A couple of follows to the second last. Bantown Girl jumped out, Tell Me Something Girl sat in second behind her. Zarek the Brave and Golden Joy dropped in at the back. And I got to the second hurdle, Tell Me Something Girl attacked it. jumped by Bantown Girl and pulled her way to the front. She jumped really carefully at Leopardstown in her first run back over hurdles after being chased and Tell Me Something Girl. And this was much more like the old one. Fourth hurdle, she jumped it really well. Zarek the Brave made a mistake. And again, at the third last, Zarek the Brave was quite sloppy. Now, Paul Townend switched him out then, rushed him up on the bend to get competitive. Second last, Paul lands going the marginally the better on Zarek the Brave. But to be fair to Tell Me Something Girl, she kept going with him. They both jumped the last reasonably well. Zarek the Brave does beat her a bit snugly, but she kept going every step of the way to the line, Tell Me Something Girl. And at a biggish price each way, she'll run a race in the Mayor's Hurdle. She's definitely coming back. She's progressing. She'll progress from Leopardstown to here. Where Zarek the Brave goes, he's a little bit in no man's land. Probably ends up running the Champion Hurdle, but I'd be surprised if he's not A, not old enough, and B, not good enough.
Yeah. Well, he mentioned the Champion Hurdle. He's also talking about there's a potential to hold him back for Fairy House and Punchestown. Regarding Tell Me Something Girl, it's similar to Bob Ollinger. She really did not take to fences, did she? And she's taken a while to get her mojo back over hurdles, but she has now.
It does, because horses have to get their confidence back. And she was very ponderous in Leopardstown. She jumped much better at Naas at the weekend.
Okay, then let's have a look at the Mayor's Hurdle prices. Paddy Power, non-runner, no bet. Lossie Mouth is now 4-6 odds on from 15-8. Astro Diamond has also shortened into 7-2 from 7s. Gallimasso slightly tightened up, but reasons to think why those two might turn around the form from Doncaster. Right, let's move up in trip and talk about the McCoy Contractors Cleve Hurdles. Some oldies and some very goodies, particularly the winner.
Someone described on a Saturday as the best veterans race ever run in Cheltenham, and probably been a bit harsh on him. But look, Noble Eights booked out very wide, good and handy. Dashiell Drasher, Botox Haas, Chash Champ just sat behind him. Paisley Park, strong leader, and Flight Deck at the back. Now, I think up to the fourth hurdle, Noble Eights has dropped back a little bit, and Paisley Park has come sort of forward to sit just behind the front bunch. And then they come all the way down the hill to the seventh hurdle. Noble Eights is back up close to the front. And you can throw a blanket over the seven of these. They weren't going that quick, and it was really condensed race for a lot of it. The eighth hurdle, Flight Deck, made a mistake. I can jump the ninth hurdle, Drasher, struggling to hold his position on the inside and has to be rousted forward. And then the 10th hurdle, Botox Haas, steps into the middle of it and is quite lucky not to fall. But then again, top of the hill, they're still all condensed. And then the race starts. The first one to get look to be struggling, a strong leader who drops off the back to the second last. He's absolutely flat to the boards. And then you're thinking, well, Dashiell and Botox Haas are starting to pull away. But you're always thinking, this is a new course in Cheltenham. There's a good spread on them. Those at the back are still going to be coming. Harry Cobden goes left on Noble Yates. Paisley Park, Tom Bellamy comes to the right-hand side with strong leader. And you know going to the last that the ones in front, Dashiell and Botox Haas, they're only making up the numbers because the cavalry is coming. Noble Yates jumped it okay. He gets to the front. I think he was only doing enough when he gets there. Paisley Park, he was careful at the last, and it's his jumping that's let him down a little bit this year at Paisley Park. He was never the quickest, but he's gotten a little bit slower, and he's run another brilliant race, but Noble Eights just held him off.
Like you, I thought this was a classic new course hurdle race, wasn't it? In the way things change from two out to the line, don't count those out at the back there.
No, and you're looking thinking which one of them is going to come first and which one of them is going to get there. It was a great race to watch, but Noble Yates, yeah, I think he can even improve jumping-wise. I know it wasn't, the emphasis is not hugely on jumping on the new course of Cheltenham, but even come March, that last hurdle goes forward, it used to be the other way around, whereas this time of year, you can get over the last and win your race, but by March, you have to attack and jump that last hurdle.
And we should just reflect on what a marvellous career Emmett Mullins has fashioned for Noble Yates, winning the Grand National as a novice at the age of 7, now winning the Grade 2 Cleve, heading towards the Stayers Hurdle with a proper chance. I mean, this is a remarkable horse, but who has been campaigned really thoughtfully.
Yeah, very thoughtfully. And I suppose when you watched him win in the Many Clouds last year, he looked to have a really good turn of foot. He did run well in last year's Gold Cup. He's running to a high level. Emmett probably doesn't think he can win a Gold Cup, so what race can you be competitive in? And it looks to be the Stayers Hurdle. But I would also think that when Emmett watched Haydock, where he won with Slade Steel, was it?
Slate Lane.
Slate Lane beat fine margin. Crambo finishes third. Crambo goes to Ascot and beats all of those horses in the staying race at Ascot, I'm sure Emma Mullins is thinking, well, I mightn't have Slate Lane anymore, but I still have Noble Eights.
Emma Lavelle was saying afterwards that maybe Paisley Parker's just got a fantastic sense of humour and he is just, you know, waiting for the big reveal on the Thursday of the festival. And Ollie Murphy, who trains Strong Leader, was saying, oh, if only the horse would jump. I mean, he did make mistakes at virtually every hurdle and finished that close in the end.
Yeah, he did, but what can you do? Keep practicing, I suppose, but he has to, if I'm being very honest, I think they all have to improve to repel Chupu, Irish Point, maybe even Monkfish.
Yeah, I feel that Noble Yates, there is potential, but other than that, I do tend to agree with that point, I think, about the Cleve. Marvellous race, though, it was to watch. We had another marvellous race to watch as well earlier in the week at Goran. The John Mulhern Galmoy Hurdle won by, wait for it, Monkfish.
Yeah, I must say, well, probably surprised me as much as anybody else that he was fit enough to go and well, ready enough to go and win in the conditions in Goran last week. Some of the boy jumped out in front. Devil's coachman followed him. Slight change of tactics in Ashdale Bob. He was ridden more forward than he has been in a while. And Monkfish dropped in last. But when he get up past the stands, you can see Paul Townend moves up behind Jody McGarvey and Ashdale Bob. And Ashdale Bob just comes alive. And he never switched off. Now, they were going slow, but a horse's eye on the side of his head can see horses behind him. And he always seemed to be running forward from Monkfish. Sixth hurdle, he was still quite free. And not a lot happened other than how keen Ashdale Bob was. They got around to the 10th hurdle. Monkfish seemed to kind of bunny hop it or kick it out of the ground or something. It wasn't an orthodox way of jumping a hurdle anyway. At the 11th hurdle, I wasn't happy when I saw Mark Walsh giving Devil's coachman a tap on the shoulder. We're not happy for his chances. I thought, he's not getting much of a feel. Mark then pushed Rachel away from the third last. They hadn't gone quick. He's trying to get Devil's coachman competitive. They swung to the second last and the four of them across the track. Monkfish probably just behind them. And then it tells on them. The Devil's coachman was never going. Ashdale Bob ran too free. Somerville Boy keeps plugging away, but he was beaten in the handicap on his last start. And Monkfish powers down the outside, jumps the last and goes away for a lovely win. But I do think he will have to come considerably forward from that to be competitive in any grade one race.
Yeah. I tend to agree. When he holds body and soul together, he's just a bit classier than the rest of those, isn't he? But the problem with him has been his huge frame and keeping himself sound. Afterwards, they immediately, connections, Rich Ritchie and Joe Chambers were talking about the Stayers hurdle, but there is always the left field possibility of the Gold Cup. Still, he has an entry and no doubt he will be staying in right until the end.
So that's a fair call. I imagine he will, and until I suppose the pieces of the jigsaw come together and we know what's getting to March, there'll be no decision on what race Monkfish is going to run in. He has come out of it really well. I saw him the other morning, and Ruth Dudfield rides him every morning. He still looks really well, but yeah, I just felt he handled the ground, the conditions better in Goran Park the other day than the opposition, and I think more is going to be required.
Yeah, I like the fact that he is so tall that even when you're about eight people back around the winner's enclosure, as I was at Goran, you can still get a picture of him quite easily.
Did you enjoy your day in Goran?
I did. It was absolutely fantastic. I did. I also enjoyed walking the course. Thanks for not joining me on it. Here is the betting for the Paddy Power Stayers Hurdle, which is non-runner, no bet. And Noble Yates is the one that has significantly moved into eights from 14s. Let's move on now to the juveniles.
Welcome along to another episode of the Punters Panel.
Bang the drum for that and bumpers last year. It's going to be a nice novice hurdler. Can't you win a good handicap?
Would you care to maybe try for one other one? Just because we're here and cameras are on and stuff.
Can we get a pint for Ruby or a Red Bull or something?
He will probably come with John Wayne lookalike on him, more than likely at the same time.
Here, do you want those?
Catch the imagination.
Well, someone will do it.
I knew you were going to go. I'm going to correct you, but I just said no as well.
That's where you end up with your Paddy Power Gold Cup.
That's where he gets paid the big bucks.
Now, in the first race on Saturday at Cheltenham, we had a big shake-up in the British juvenile standings. We always knew it was going to be that way. Sir Gino was taking on the then-favourite for the Triumph Hurdle, Burdett Road. What did you make of this?
Oh, it's a lot. Milan Tino changed the tactics, booked out, went a really good gallop. Sergino was sat in behind him, and Burdett Road settled really well early in the race for Harry Cobden. Second hurdle, all jumped it really well, turned down the back. Milan Tino is well clear, and James Bowen is in control of the race. He's dragging the rest of the field. He's judging the pace here. Gets to the fifth hurdle. He's edged a little bit closer, but Burdett Road was after jumping way better than he had in November. Top of the hill, the ones you want are all there, and they face down to the second last. James Bowen is running away on Sergino at the second last hurdle, and when he jumps it, he shows great confidence. He didn't show it later in the day, but he has the confidence and the ability to do it, and he pulls Sergino back behind Milan Tino, waits till he gets off the bend, and even if you watch James all the way up, he only goes to Milan Tino. He doesn't go by him until Burdett Road appears on his left to push him forward, and then he commits him to the last hurdle. Horse has a look. He did have a look in Kempton as well. Pinged the last and scoots up the hill to win. Very confident ride and a brilliant performance from the horse. The runner-up, to me, just didn't stay. People say, oh, you got Keane in the middle. To me, he did way more wrong in November and showed a great turn of foot. The older course is a sharper track. To me, the 2-1 on the new course is going to be too far for him. And I wonder would they consider sticking him in the Supreme.
Yeah, he's not in at the moment. He is, of course, in the champion hurdle. I know that I take the point that you're making. I mean, he jumped a lot better than when he won in November, but I don't think he settled as well. He was really pulling much harder. I was having a look at the two comparisons, and maybe that 70-day break meant that he was a little bit over racing, a bit too fresh here. But I still don't see how he turns that form around with Sergino, because that was brilliant. And I thought it was striking in the run up to this race how implicitly confident Nicky Henderson was coming up against a horse that is a Royal Ascot winner, had impressed so much in November. He still seemed to be exuding confidence. And the other key point, I think, was that they were saying that they'd kind of taken their French recruit, Sergino, would have done loads of schooling. And then he started looking a bit sort of gawky at his hurdles at Kempton. So they've done a lot of schooling since. And again, I think that showed as well, didn't you?
Yeah, it did, yeah. You said, I look at the last. You're probably not a horse you want to be on your own with. Yes. But I don't know. I think Sergino did things, it's all opinion, much in a much better fashion last weekend. Just because he's a Royal Ascot winner
Burdett Road.
I thought he was much more professional at the weekend. I just think he's a fast horse. Stamina is going to be his issue.
But when the race sort of slowed up mid-race, he kind of was really pulling Harry's arms out. But anyway, he obviously underperformed compared to what he did in November. Accelero as well, I think, is worth mentioning. The horse that finished fourth, still a maiden. I thought he ran with a great deal of promise in fourth place. There is the betting for the Triumph Hurdle, and that is the impact of that race. From having been 3-1 favourite, Burdett Road is now 10-1. Having been 4-1, Sergino is now the favourite at 5-4. Clearly, there's a really significant race this weekend at Leopardstown, the Grade 1 Spring Juvenile. And which horse of Willie Mullins is going to step forward and be the number one? Might it be the Punchestown winner's High Wind or Stormheart, or the Limerick winner Bunting? It could be Cargees, who chased home Calaconti at Christmas. Calaconti for Gordon Elliott, but Cargees was conceding her weight. It won't be Salvatore Mundi, Ruby, who lots of form literalists were looking at his second to Sergino at Otoy in April and thinking, hello, but he's not running.
No, he's not in there. Plenty of others in there, and it'll be interesting. Don't envy. Or I didn't envy Paul Downland having to pick one of them. But look, plenty of talented horses in there. The one horse that won't surprise me if he gets involved is Ethical Diamond. I don't know what happened to him at Christmas, but his homework suggests he's a lot better than the ride he ran.
Interesting. Right. Let's move on to the novice hurdlers now, shall we? Again, I'm going to take you to Cheltenham on Saturday, Ruby, and have a look at Gidley Park. What did you make of this performance?
Yeah, had Johnny Burke lined him up handy wide towards the back on the outside. Jumped to the lead at the second hurdle. Harry Cobden didn't think he was going fast enough. Took it off him and Isaac DeZobo as they went to the third hurdle. And Johnny Burke switched to his inside. Now, the fifth hurdle, Gidley Park, was a bit messy. He wasn't great at the seventh hurdle either. Down to the second last, he does look to be going well. Johnny Burke stays to the middle of the track. James Bowen then gets involved in lucky place on the outside and gets to the front. Actually gets by Gidley Park going to the last, but that really long run in suited Gidley Park. Now, I did think Lucky Place looked more professional. He put his head down and ran pretty straight from the last, whereas Gidley Park wanders a bit left, wanders a bit right. Johnny has to put his whip down, straighten him up and kind of keep him balanced. I'd say there's improvement in Gidley Park, but watching him at the weekend, I mean, I know he's a little gassy earlier, but he looks more like a stayer than a bear in Bingham horse to me.
And potentially a chaser as well. I still think he remains with tights, though. I think, I like the fact that he's got game, battling tendencies along with his ability.
Yeah, I'd agree. He's great power and great use of himself. His hurdling technique maybe isn't wonderful, but if he's going to be a chaser in the making, I wouldn't be too worried about that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, Billericay Dickie made quite an impression on me at Punchestown this week.
Yeah, he did. Beat Bo Walking and Find a Fortune. Look, going to the second hurdle, he was a little bit keen with Paul Townend, but they were going relatively slow. Got in tight to the fifth hurdle and then had a good cut at the sixth hurdle. And it was in the second last home that it was interesting. They hadn't gone quick. Mark Walsh kicked at the second last on Bull Walking, but Found a Fortune doesn't really go after him, but Paul Townend definitely wasn't. He kept a hold of Billericay Dickie, follows him into the straight. And I was watching it live thinking, Paul, I hope this horse does pick up for you. He switched him to the inside, going to the last. And eventually, you can see he starts to come on the bridle, cruises through, jumps the last well, and then quick and nicely to the line. Willie hadn't been overly bullish about him beforehand in an interview, but he did impress on the track. He definitely was a better horse on the race course than he was showing us at home.
Yeah, and he surprised him on the ground as well, didn't he? He thought he was a sound surface performer. What race would you go to for Cheltenham if you were with Billericay, if it was down to you alone?
Erin Bingham, I suppose, but I'd say he has to improve a good bit.
He is 10-1 from 20-1 in the betting for that. Again, Paddy Power, non-winner, no bet. Gidley Park has shortened up sevens from nines. I just wonder whether there'll be some horses that are just a bit sharper over hurdling compared to him.
I'd say by both of them could be bigger prices by Monday.
Yeah, I take that point. Before we talk about that, Jericho de Repenay at Doncaster.
Didn't blow me away, but managed to get the job done. To be fair to him though, Doncaster is a difficult enough track. It's a mess. Not difficult. It's a fast track. You have to do things right. And I know he's won at Newbury. People saw they're pretty much the same shape. They're chalk and cheese, Newbury and Doncaster. And he got the job done. Maybe pushed him a little bit too far in the betting, the bookmakers. I didn't think it was as bad as others. And he showed that he stays. Doncaster's a fast track, really fast track. He'd just be a better horse at a stiffer track.
It was a bit like John Bond winning ugly in the Rossington Main, I think. I do think that pushing out from fours to sevens, non-winner, no bet, is a bit of an overreaction to my mind.
Yeah, but he did the most important thing, win.
Exactly, and he knows how to do it. And he remains, there's just something about him that suggests he's got a lot of class. As you say, significant races over two different distances at the Dublin Racing Festival this weekend that we'll be discussing this time next week. But we do need to move on to the mares because Jade DeGrugy won the Sol Arena. This was really impressive, wasn't it?
Yeah, we only mentioned her last week. We didn't get to talk about her, but she was quite good. Look to the West made the run and Jade DeGrugy sat in second. Penny 100, who finished the second, was just behind them. But even from the third hurdle, as they climb up the hill away from the stands, you can see Brian Hayes' body, how far back in the saddle he is. His feet are forward. She's really tanking with him. Pinged the fourth last hurdle to put her in the picture. And Rachel hadn't gone overly quick on Look to the West in front. And there's a sprint on to the second last. Jade DeGrugy jumped the well and got to the front. Look to the West, looked a bit green, sort of ran around a bit. Penny 100 down the outside was trying her best. Pink in the Park got there but flattened out. And Judicious Allen in the green and yellow. She closed right up under Adrian Heskin, but ultimately got done for speed. I'd say she's more of a stayer, Judicious Allen. But Jade DeGrugy was really impressive, hit the line really strong. I know she's won twice over further than 2 miles, but watching her, I don't think she's any issue coming back down to two at Cheltenham.
And it's a stiff enough two as well, isn't it, at Cheltenham?
It is. And it's a race that has even suited horse that have been dropped in because they've gone that fast. It is a staying contest.
So she is now a favourite, 11-4 from 7-2 in that non-runner, no-bet market. But nonetheless, Britain's big hope, Dysart Enos, she continues to impress and she beat the geldings at Doncaster.
Yeah, and bolted up for Paddy Brennan and Fergal O'Brien. Loved her between the last two hurdles with her ears pricked. She was only Dawson in front and she absolutely sluiced in. How deep a race it was, I couldn't tell you, but she couldn't have been any more impressive.
And she was just tightened up slightly, as you just saw there, from 7-2, from 4-1 into 7-2. And she was really impressive. Right, that's where we stand with the novice hurdlers. Just the novice chasers to go. Mm-hmm. Not long left, Ruby, but we do have to talk about Embassy Gardens. He impressed me on debut over fences. He's impressed me again at Nace.
Yeah, he did it well. Sendor Cleagan headed off down the inside Embassy Gardens. Paul Townend went wide on the right. There's a Morehouse behind him, and let's be clear about it. Four fences, if you look at Embassy Gardens versus Sendor Cleagan, and it's backed up in the figures, he jumped much better than him. Round on the second circuit, you can still see Sean O'Keefe is going inside Paul Townend on the outside. The 11 fence, Embassy Gardens again, more fluent than Sendor Cleagan. I love the way he got in really deep to the 13 fence. He could have galloped on there, he didn't. He got in and got up and got out. And then the second last, he's going much easier than Sendor Cleagan. He's solid at the last and he pulls away to win. He does look like a natural chaser, whether he's Brown Advisory or National Hunt Chase bound, that hasn't been decided, but he's favoured for the National Hunt Chase.
Well, and Willie was saying immediately afterwards, when you're favourite for a race at the Cheltenham Festival, that really is a hint that you should take into 11-4 from 7-1 in the non-runner, no bet market for Paddy Power. Anything in where the two of them race? Sandor Clegane down the inside, Embassy Gardens down the outer?
I would imagine Sean O'Keefe walked it and felt the inside was at least a level par. He is one of the, you do see him walking tracks the whole time. Traditionally, the outside would suit you at this, but who knows?
Okay, and at Cheltenham,
it didn't help the other two.
It really didn't. And at Cheltenham, we had the Timeform Novices Handicap Chase. Now, of course, this was won by Stage Star last year. This year, his stable companion Genie's Destiny did it off a higher mark.
Yeah, and he's been progressing along similar sort of lines, maybe Genie's Destiny. Now, himself and Prairie Wolf booked out to go a really good gallop. Theatre Man sat just behind him in the red and white colours, and A Perfecto was behind him. Solid pace. Fourth jump, Harry Cobden jumped it well, but he slowed down on landing. He's very good at that in front, Harry Cobden. And they pace up by the stands. Theatre Man looks to be going just about as fast as he's comfortable at this trip. 10th fence, Genie's Destiny gets in very quick, gets in close, but he's very, very quick at it. He takes the 12th fence in his stride. He's a good cut at the 14th fence where Tira Man is flat to the boards behind him. And as they run down to the 15th, A Perfecto has been travelling better than anything every step of the way. Gets in deep, Genie's Destiny, to the second last. And at the last, he jumps it well and pulls away. Now, I think the runner-up eventually is Tira Man, who needs to go up in trip. And A Perfecto, who fades back to be third, probably could go back in trip. But the winner, Genie's Destiny, he's going the right direction. I couldn't see Stage Star winning last year's Turners. I can't see Genie's Destiny, but it's a small chance he's going to go down with a big chance.
Well, he's more rideable, Harry Cobden's words, than Stage Star, who he says is deceptively difficult. 4-1 from 12-1 with Paddy Power, non-runner, no bet for it, and a £5 higher mark from which he won the race. I mean, we have to take it seriously. But there are some significant novice chases this weekend. We have the Ladbrokes Novice Chase over 2.5 miles. Interesting to see Gaelic Warrior here rather than over 2 miles, Ruby.
I suppose Lydia, he's a Grade 1 3 mile novice hurdle winner. He's two wins over fence have both been at 2.5 in Punchestown 2-3 at Limerick. Was it going to go up or down? He's gone up in trip.
He's up against the likes of Grange Clare West and Fact to File. Over at Sandown on the Saturday, we have 5 for the Grade 1 Silly R's, including Hermes Allen, who Paul Nichols hinted might go Pendle Aintree rather than get involved with Cheltenham this time around. That's an interesting race with Le Patron there, but no Corbett's Cross.
No Corbett's Cross. Hermes Allen brings anything like he brought to Sandown or Kempton even, he'll win.
Le Patron, of course, the Henry VIII winner, and J-Lo, who was taken out in the Lightning Chase at the first fence, it also runs again. He last saw him 2 weeks ago. And then, of course, we have the Irish Arkle. We had hoped for a matchup between Marine National and Gaelic Warrior. Instead, he faces Fasal Vega. Got to be ridden more positively this time, hasn't it, Fasal Vega?
Definitely be looking for a better gallop anyway. Marina Snell happened to make it at Christmas. Maybe they'll ride him the same way, but he'd be hoping for a better gallop with Fasal Vega anyway.
And Marina Snell just looks so talented. I mean, that was such a taking performance on debut, wasn't it?
Super.
Right. OK, so we've already teased you about what we're going to be talking about this time next week. If you need more right now, you can always go to the column, racingtv.com/column. But also join Ruby and I at the end of each day of the Dublin Racing Festival for a Cheltenham Festival-esque wrap. Our immediate thoughts of what have happened on the day. But then we'll be back with our more considered thoughts, won't we, Ruby, this time next week. Until then, we'll see you. Bye bye.
Paddy Power. Sponsors of the Road to Cheltenham.